First time I ever saw him, I was we were at Fairleigh Dickinson University up in New Jersey during the summer watching a high school AAU Adidas event. And there were four courts spread out across their main gym there. And one of my assistants, actually Frank Hayes, said to me, "Coach, you've got to watch this court right here." I know, because I go to those things, I'm all over the place, you know. He said, "You've got to watch this court." So I'm watching this young guy play, and then all at once there's a break here, and I start looking down the other end, and I see a guy playing, and I just get up and go down because this guy's putting on a show. And when Frank came back, he said, "Coach, did you watch that game?" I said, "No, I'm watching this kid." I said, "If you get me that kid, we'll win the national championship." He said, "Well, the word is that, you know, his father's going to get hired, and he's going to go with him." I said, "Well, you need to be looking for a job, you know." But the first time I saw him, and he was, without question, the greatest high school player I've ever watched since I've been in coaching. I mean, he was, and everything that he did back then, he just took it to a different level. And if you go back and if you look at what, you know, the way he went about things, everybody knows about his training and obviously having a chance to coach a guy like Kevin Durant, and Kevin telling me how he made an effort to go spend time with him because he wanted to know everything that he was doing. And the fact that Kobe and I think Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson did all that for him, and he's handed it down to LeBron James. If you go back and look, you know, Kobe grew up, you know, loving Michael Jordan, and here comes LeBron loving Kobe. Now you had Kevin Durant right behind loving LeBron. But the thing I think that when you think about it too is the way once he was done that he still had another chapter that he was wanting to write, and the way he got involved with women's basketball for his daughters and with all that. But the impact that he had, I think, you know, yesterday I was at my brother-in-law's funeral when I heard the news. But and our assistants yesterday were with our team, and when they told them what had happened, guys in the room started crying. So I think that shows you the impact. And then today I get a call that our guys want to wear, you know, purple shoelaces tomorrow night. And so it shows you the impact that a guy like Kobe Bryant can have. And I remember the impact back in the 90s that Magic Johnson had on our team back then. And I remember telling them about his situation with HIV. So these guys, players do grow up looking and watching these guys every move they make. And the impact that Kobe, I mean, he's certainly one of the greatest players ever, but it was, and it's the way he did. He did everything that a coach would want. You know, you talk to your players about wanting to win, the competitive spirit, you know, how hard you got to work. Everybody knows about his six-hour workout, you know, the running in the gym, his body. He still continued to do that when he retired. And so he was a guy that I remember sitting down specifically with Kevin Durant and watching tape of Kobe Bryant and saying, "You need to add this to your game." And so he's a guy that for so many years, you know, coaches used him because he was everything that everybody wanted to coach.
Any more questions today?
Coach, I know you're not taking any solace out of a loss, but did you not kind of feel that might have been the best 40 minutes your team played this year on Saturday?
Well, we did, Rob, we did play well, but you know what? What we still are trying to get these guys to understand is, you know, you get four more stops on the defensive end, you can win the game. And we show them plays that we helped them, that we didn't do our job. And the same thing can be said on the offensive end. There's four times where you come down the floor where there's guys that are open for baskets that you need, and you might only get one of those. And, you know, we missed twice two cutters to the rim in transition that were as wide open as you could be, and we didn't make the pass. So what you take from that game is, you know, we could have won that game, but we didn't because we're not there yet in terms of taking advantage of the opportunities that when they present themselves. And then, you know, I mean, there's so many close possessions, and you could say this play, that play. But the fact is, I do appreciate the fact that our older guys played well. They handled the environment, which I thought they would. The younger guys didn't. And you know, it's just the fact that we felt going in and we did what we were capable of doing. We could win the game, and we still feel that way. Then you come back and you show them, but you don't get anything out of that. You know, the what-ifs, you don't get you anything. But But we, again, guys were, they were competing, but the younger guys competed without a purpose. They weren't doing their assignments. They were too locked into one thing, playing. And again, playing hard is something you have to do, but you gotta, you've still got to do your job within that. And just worrying about one thing out there, because it's a team game, you know, you're not going to get it done.
Grant, Mike, and Jimmy.
How much was Saturday eye-opening for you, Roche, and what level he has to play at?
Well, I hope it's a big one, because you know what, he it's like he gets by. We get on him every day in practice about reaching and the fact he can step around and on some of our guys and deflect some balls. But first thing we told him, you can't reach here. And the first time he goes in the game, he reaches and he gets dunked on. And the hardest he played was when we put him in the foul in that situation. When we put him in, that's the only time in the game he got down, and he played with any intent in terms of he knew exactly what he was doing. And but when he and Olivier did it one time too. I mean, Olivier showed that he could do what we asked him to do. They just, neither one of them could sustain it. So it should be an eye-opening. It should be a great learning experience for them, that they would just stay locked into what they're supposed to do and just do their job. They'll be fine. If they don't, they're going to get exposed.
What do you feel like went wrong for Josiah on Saturday, and how does he kind of correct what was the issue there?
You know, I don't know what I mean. That was arguably, in my opinion, maybe the worst game he played all year, because he wasn't very good on either end of the floor. And I don't know. I don't know what it was, because we felt like he had really made strides, but he had reverted back. He went back to that game where just he wasn't locked in at all on either end. And played poorly. He knows it. But again, all this stuff for these guys, it's new to them, and I get that. But at this point in time, we can't be going backwards. I mean, you know, I had thought we were past that stage with these guys, that they would understand that you've got to keep moving forward right now, and we have to, because this is the time of year where everybody gets separated. You know, if you want to be a team that's going to be playing late in the year, you better realize that it's about moving forward and getting better and not going backwards after you've learned some valuable lessons through losses. And you don't, you know, I like to win and lose and learn lessons. It's really not, doesn't feel very good when you know a guy's capable of doing more than he did and you lose.
Rick, Eve Hans, do you think that was his best game? And do you think he can continue to play at that high of a level on a consistent basis?
I do think it was, in terms of him being, and again, he and Folky both were terrific. They were, and not perfect, but they did it a lot. And I like to think that Eve, again, just what I was kind of talking about, not only play there, but continue to move forward, because I think there's so much more that he can do too. But one thing about him, he's gonna work. He's gonna do what he has to do, but he's getting better. He's getting better around the rim, playing quicker, getting off the ground a little bit quicker. Just like I was talking about Josiah, he can't go backwards, and he's got to keep moving forward.
Coach, as you mentioned in that last question, what do you have to say about John Fulkerson's play the past couple of games?
You know what? I was we were all really happy with him Saturday, and the fact that we were really trying to watch his minutes. We think that's important, but when we were making the substitutions that we had really made the previous game, because we thought he had played really well, he didn't want to come out. And we knew going into that game that we were going to go head up against Azubuike, and we're going to give him the ball and say, hey, you're going to make him play, and you're going to go at him. And he did a fabulous job. He really did. He did everything we could ask him to do. He, you know, you look at, he know, and the thing where John is now, he is getting to a point where he understands his mistakes, which some guys, it takes him a long time to do that. He knows, like he had a play there late where we had got him in an isolation and they came down on him and took it away from him. But that wasn't all his fault either, because the guard had passed. We were wanting him to get out of there. But again, he reminded me of his freshman year when we went to North Carolina. That's the John Fulkerson that showed up at North Carolina. Then he got hurt after that, and now we hope that that's who he is, and he'll continue to move forward.
How important was Saturday for Santiago, and what does he have to do to kind of keep going on that same route of being efficient with the basketball?
Well, we're happy that, again, he played without turning the ball over. But you know what? Again, he's a guy that starting to understand our system and the fact that he made some mistakes on the defensive end, and he knew it. In the past, he didn't. He knew it Saturday, like on the lob play that we told him that they're going to get somebody. And, you know, Bill and his staff are good. They're going to watch and see who's watching the ball, who's ball watcher is away from the ball. They got him. And he knew it on one of the other plays late in the game where we out of bounds. We were in our switching defense. He didn't switch. And as soon as he did it, and somebody came over and fouled. But he, again, he's starting to understand where he's breaking down on the defensive end, which is a good thing there. Then offensively, we do think he's getting more comfortable with this style of basketball, but he'll still have to continue to prove that because people are going to continue to challenge him.
Coach, it's back here. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Coach, it's interesting listening to the analysts and the other coaches talk about preparing for all the left-handers on the roster. Talk about that and how different it might be or may not be in preparing the lefties in practice for competition.
Well, I think with all the analytics out there today, like, you know, you go into the game, I mean, it's been well documented about Kansas. There are a lot of right-handed drivers. And so you go in the game, and back in the past, you know, you would have your defense, and regardless, you know, you'd normally say, hey, this is how we're going to play our defense, stick to our defensive principles, this, that, or whatever you're doing. But now with the analytics out there, you know, this guy goes right 95% of the time. You start trying to shade guys that way. And so, and most players are right, you know, most teams enter going to the right. But everything we've always tried to do has always been to go either way with it. And we have never put an emphasis on telling our guys to go a certain way. All we tell them to do, when we know we're running something particularly for them, we're going to try to get them using their strong hand. But we have some guys that say, no, I'd rather go this way and get back to my strong hand. So it becomes an individual type thing. Again, our emphasis Saturday was to try to force them left as much as we could, and maybe their emphasis was to get us to go right. But again, it's not something that we have put a lot of thought into, to be quite honest with you.
Where's your trust level with Jalen Johnson right now? It seems like it has kind of reached its high point since he's been here.
Yeah, I would say that, and I would say Jalen, like I'm talking about all these guys, the improvement level, he's got to become a much better team defensive player. He should be the best on our team at doing that. That's what he needs to do because, you know, people go at him when he's on the defensive end, but that means more than anything he has got to understand what playing team defense is all about. He, Devontae Gaines, Josiah, Santi, all those guys are still, but Jalen should not be in that position right now. He should already understand all this. But we do have a trust in him because I think, one, offensively, he settled into what we need him to do now, and he could take it to another level if he would get this in, if he could figure out the defensive end the way we need him to.
You kind of run down your past with Buzz Williams, what you've seen from A&M?
Very similar to where we are this year when you think about it. You know, you look at the teams we've beaten in the league, pretty much who they've beaten. And, you know, they took – I think they took LSU into overtime. And I know they lost a tough game Saturday in the challenge. But they've gotten so much better since the non-league, moving in the right direction. They have a point guard that averaged, 6 points or so in the non-league. He's up to 12 in the league, two post players that can create, you know – have a player like Eve that can play all over the court, and you know, another guy like in the Azubuike mode that can jump out of the Nebo, that can jump out of the gym and do all that. And I think Buzz is doing a good job putting in his program what he wants to do. They run a lot of sets, use a little 1-2-2 press like we've been using, and what you look at where they started and where they now, they've got to believe they're right in the mix with everybody else.
Rick, you didn't get a lot out of your bench at Kansas. How important is it for this team to get consistent production out of the bench?
Jimmy, it's really important. That's been, Olivier, you know, and Urosh had made some strides that we could count on them. But there's going to be some games where, you know, like matchups create situations in terms of how much guys might play or might not play. But the fact is, we need our bench to help us. You know, as this season continues to go, we need those guys to help us. We need Josiah, Santi, and those guys. We can't have guards turning the ball over 5-6 times. You can't do that. You know, especially guys that you're counting on. Just simply want them to get your offense started. But if you get to the bench, there's not one guy on that bench that we don't need and hope that they're going to want to play more. And that's what it's going to get down to. How much more do you want to play? Because we've got we're in a position in these close games, you know, and you're going to be in most of them if you play up to your ability. And then the question is, when it gets down to really the winning time, you know, who can you count on? You like to, at that point in time, have some experience out there that's rested, as opposed to having to have grinded it all game just to get it to that point. So we do need those guys, and I hope we've told them all year how much we need them. We just need them to be consistent and just do exactly what we're asking them to do.
Coach, you've talked a lot this year about Jordan Bowden pressing at times. It looked like on Saturday that might have been the best he's done at answering the bell and being aggressive without forcing things. Would you your take
on
that?
He was really good. He really was, and I think the fact again that he set in the first half a lot probably gave him a chance to even see it more, you know. And when he came in, and he the second half did a lot of good things, driving the ball hard. The only thing that I really the lobby tried to throw to Folky, those two guys were looking at each other, and Folky pointed for it. But in that situation, you can't do that. And that was the only thing disappointing with them in the second half. That was a huge play at the time. Why they did that, I mean, you're not going to win a game against the top three team in the country in their building thinking you're going to throw a play like that when it's down to winning time. But overall, I would agree with you, Rob. I thought the second half he was really, really good. And defensively, he's been good. One time, I think he was guarding Dotson and switched off and wanted to switch off and I think put Josiah on him, and he went by Josiah, and he told the coaches that was his fault, that he just had been chasing him a little bit. And those are the plays that older guys have to eliminate. They have to eliminate those plays. But he was, again, I just the second half, I thought he was really locked in.